Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joining me in the studio is Anne, my producer. Hi, Anne.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm great. I have to give a shout out to this fine city's MTA. I just had the most... I'm jinxing myself because I still have to get back to New Jersey via Manhattan. But I met my NYU students this morning for dim sum in Flushing, Queens.
So all right. I left my house. Queens.
We had so much fun. I left my house. I took the PATH train to 14th Street, took the F up to the 7, and then took the 7 to Flushing for $2.50. I got that whole way with no incidents.
Okay, but what time is this?
I left my, let's see, I got on the PATH train at 8:30.
Okay, so you're like in rush hour.
I was like in rush hour.
Okay.
And then, so we had dim sum, and it was amazing. This morning I ate chicken feet and pig's stomach. Stomach was delicious until one of my students were like, it feels like a cat's tongue. Yeah. And then I could not think that. And I was trying to think of the cookie called the cat's tongue, and...
It didn't work out.
No, it really did feel like a cat's tongue.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay, disgusting.
But it was flavor-wise, it was delicious.
Right.
So we all ate, and, you know, there's 20 students, myself and my colleague and her friend came.
Mm-hmm.
We ordered whatever we wanted. Every time the cart came by, ordered what we wanted. And the grand total for 20 people to eat was under $200.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Where was this?
It was called Jade Asian Dim Sum Palace on 39th and Main Avenue or Main Street.
Sure.
Right off the very last stop, mm-hmm. one block north. It was great. And then I got back on the 7, took it to the G, was nervous because I've lived in Brooklyn. I know to avoid the G, but mm-hmm. I had no choice. Got on the G, no problem. Got on the L, no problem. And now I'm here. And I'm just like, I can't believe that happened so seamlessly.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I get weird about the G now because I take it, you know, Tuesday afternoons to come over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it like never lets me down. And it's weird. Because it's, you know, it's just...
I mean, when I lived in Prospect Heights, that was the train that you did not take.
No, like, you never took
just
the
walk,
G.
But just walk.
It's getting better.
But so big, big thanks to the MTA. I truly appreciate your taking care of me for under $5 today.
Amazing.
Been, yeah.
Amazing.
So I hosted the debate at the Javits Center.
Yes, you did.
Today is the last day of the International Food and Restaurant Show. If you use the code SPEAKER, you can still go for free. I had a great time. I hung out with Keith Beavers, who's the owner of In Vino. He's going to come on the show and talk about being an East Village entrepreneur in a couple weeks. And Joshua David Stein, who is the food critic for the New York Observer, and he writes for In Style, and he's like this incredibly prolific writer. Mm-hmm. He's very, very witty, very, very smart.
And has a show on Heritage Radio.
A show on Heritage Radio. Thank you, Jack. Hi, Jack Inslee.
Anytime. I'm just here for the plug.
And we had a really, really great dialogue. So the whole thing was about being... I was moderating critic versus owner-operator.
Right.
And they're both super nice guys. I hadn't met Joshua in person, but I listened to his show. I read a lot of his writing, and I was like, I feel like I know this guy. And I know Keith because we're...
Friend inside your head.
Right? And right. Keith and I are friends in actual life. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get these guys to like... duke it out.
Right.
We had a really great dialogue.
They do.
And afterwards, Mark said, you know, you should have recorded that. And I was like,
did
right.
you not?
No, because I'm like not thinking.
Oh, man.
So I'm going to, we're going to try to get Joshua and Keith to come on this show and we'll kind of relive it because it was a
very
really.
Cool. You can get like more in depth.
We get more in depth and it's just interesting
issues.
Because even both of them were like, huh, I never really thought of, I mean, not that they hadn't thought about how the other one thinks, but it was very insightful and fun. So,
mm-hmm.
and I want to say thank you to anyone who came to that show and took a card and is now a new listener. Welcome to Sharp and Hot.
Hey.
So over the weekend, I think it was Saturday night, I decided I was going to up our hashtag Sharp and Hot game on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I have asked people to photograph food of a particular recipe. So I've given them the recipe for head cheese or for Kaiserschmarrn. This weekend, I was just like, you know what? Let's just see what happens if I just say, what are you cooking?
Go wild.
People totally posted stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, huh, it's working. working.
I liked everything on Instagram. All of them. Amazing. I went through it.
So there, I have a question about this Instagram thing. There were two people who posted pictures, hashtag sharp and hot.
Right.
One of them said, this is my roast chicken. The other one said, forget what it was.
Okay.
But they have no followers or like two followers. Is spam that sophisticated, or are these just people who are...
I don't think so. I mean, I have no idea, but my gut says maybe they just, I don't know, maybe they're a little bit voyeuristic, but they wanted to, or maybe they, you know, it could also be somebody who was a listener and wanted to partake in kind of like the sharp and hot challenge and set up an Instagram account
just for
to
that.
Do it.
Oh, see?
Possible.
You're so glass half full.
Ann Hogan, like, here for hire.
I'm like, it's definitely spam. Man, spam sophisticated. So I commented on, I think, but definitely one of them, both of them, to shoot me their preferred mailing address, and I'm going to go to the post office with a stack of books out of my collection.
So
to send
cool.
people.
Well, you'll know if they're robots if they don't have mailing addresses.
I haven't heard back from one
guys,
of them
guys, get on it.
Get on it. Get on the book. That being said, I don't have all the books in the world, but I'm totally going to go to like the rummage sale and start just picking out random cookbooks.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me my friend Mike sent a picture of burnt toast, and then I said I was sending him a book, and then he sent a picture of himself on fire, and he was like, the book can't get here soon enough.
Okay, I hope that was Photoshop.
I'm pretty sure it was Photoshop. Right. It might not have actually been him. I hope it was. You know, it's funny. It wasn't until just this moment that I realized
my friend might be dying burnt.
Is Mike on fire? Somebody call the fire department. Okay, and then that brings me to my bit of bad news I got from my doctor. As I was walking over here, I got a phone call. My husband and I went for our annual physicals because now we have health insurance thanks to Obamacare. And I had an odd spot on my wrist. And when I Google searched skin cancer on wrist, it looked exactly
obviously.
Like the spot. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to the doctor for the first time in, since I had James and Mark had not had a physical since high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went and they drew our blood.
That's hilarious.
It was this is how bad it was. We didn't know that you had to fast beforehand. So we actually had to go to the doctor on two different days because when we got there, they were like, did you fast? And I said, did we what? And she was like, you have to fast for the cholesterol test. No one told you that? You didn't know? Or she didn't say, no, she said, you didn't know that?
I don't feel like that should just be like a known thing.
I had no idea. So we had to go home, fast, and then go back to the doctor and have blood drawn.
Right.
It's not great news.
Break it to us.
I have ridiculously high cholesterol, like really, really high cholesterol. And so on the one hand, I'm like, well, duh, I have a bacon, egg and cheese pretty much every morning, except it's Heritage bacon and the eggs are grown in my backyard. It can't be that bad for me. So I literally found this out 10 minutes before we went on air.
Right.
So I'm a little shaken.
I think you got to tell them the number. Are you going to do it? I feel like it was, people want...
Wait, all right, wait, hang on. Anne, talk in the microphone for a second. I have to get my book.
Okay. Well, I feel like the other thing is about cholesterol, though, it might not necessarily be dietary. So it could just be like your genetic makeup and maybe we can work some other things out.
I looked it up online and it... So my husband is a little irritated that I only wrote down the numbers that are bad because apparently it's a whole picture, not just the bad numbers.
Yeah, you have like good cholesterol.
I think like a teacher. I'm like, the good kids I don't have to worry about. It's the bad ones I want to write down.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, so...
Incorrect.
Are you ready? This might be worse than Jolie Kerr when I told her how often I wash the sheet.
I think it is because I know the number.
Okay, so the... Your total cholesterol number is supposed to be between 100 on the low end and 199 on the high end.
Right.
245.
Shit. Just hearing it again, like, you still just, like... That's
so I very... I literally, 10 minutes before we went on air, I took a moment to Google cholesterol 245, and the very first hit that I got was someone saying... how it's a whole picture and it doesn't, the individual number, that total number doesn't really mean anything. And they use 245 as an example of an outlier number, which means that you're either your heart is either hemorrhaging or Herculean. I'm still sitting here, so I'm going to go with B.
Let's go Hercules.
Let's go.
I'm into it.
So the other bad number is the bad cholesterol, the LDL.
Yeah.
And can I just say... I feel like I have aged a decade in the past 48 hours because this was not things that I thought about. Also, side note, I got the wrist thing looked at, not skin cancer, just something.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I asked her, I said, well, what is it? And she said, it's some keratoconus something. And I was like, well, how do you get it? And she said, age. I was like, okay. Okay.
Morning.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's been a tough day. So LDL is supposed to be under 99.
Okay.
146. Very
Jesus
bad number.
H.
I know. Yeah. So that means that I have to do some research. I'm curious. I have to get this secondary test. I think she was saying CV profile, but she might have been saying CD profile, where you lie down and you put a you have to fast, and then they put a cuff around your wrist and they make sure your arteries are elastic.
Okay.
So the outcome of that will determine whether or not I am actually hemorrhaging and about to keel over. So, and you, there may be a job opening in Sharp and Hot.
Okay.
I have a, you know, comfort care profile in my
right,
health.
Right, right. Maybe just, bacon just needs to be like relegated to like
okay,
once
but this
week,
this brings me to, I think we should get, let's get on the show, someone who's an expert in this whole dietary, is it a dietary thing? Am I actually going to make any changes with changing my bacon intake? Probably.
I feel like at 245, it probably will be fair to say that some dietary help will lower that. But you could just also be naturally, you know, disposed for high Herculean heart cholesterol
problems. So my son, when he was much younger, they do a liver test on infants. And he had, or an iron test rather, and he had really, really low iron levels. And the doctor's immediate reaction, and I talked about this on the show when it was happening, was to put him on an iron supplement. And I was like, can I have 30 days to try with this diet?
Yeah.
And they were like, sure. So I went home. The kid ate chicken livers and egg yolks every day.
Right.
Within 30 days, he was fixed.
Yeah. I think there's always a pretty more natural way to at least approach it at first before you go.
That was very straightforward. So, I am going to blame the winter. I'm going to blame my high protein in high fat laden intake on not having the garden up and running.
Okay.
We'll
see if that works.
You're being a little judgy.
Judging?
No. Oh, I'm judging myself. I am completely projecting onto you how I am feeling right now. I'm scolding myself. I am seriously scolding.
All right. Okay.
So let's see. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have with us Chef Brian Alberg from the Red Lion Inn, who is a champion of the farm to table movement, who can maybe give me some advice on winter vegetable consumption.
Excellent.
And this one's called Pale Blue by The Landing. This is Heritage Radio Network.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. For now, I'm your host, Chef Emily Peterson, unless I keel over in the next 45 minutes. Welcome back. Joining us in the studio is Chef Brian Alberg, who is the executive chef of the Red Lion Inn up in the Berkshires. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
You're not that well.
Oh, no. You have high cholesterol, and I feel like that's because it's been in the media that that's been a bad thing for a long time. Mm. That's what I'm reacting to. I have the thing that everyone says is bad. But my critical brain and my eater brain and my educated food person brain is like, there's more to the story than what the media says in any story. So I'm going to go do my homework and get back on the treadmill, and which I should be on anyway. And we'll see. I feel fine.
Oh, good luck. You look fine.
Thank you. So do you. So you have been in New York City at a doing some pop-up kitchen type thing at Haven's Kitchen, which is a place where I have taught before, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We've done I think I've done two recently.
Okay. And so you bring the taste of the Berkshires down to New York City. Tell us about the Red Lion Inn.
Yeah. The Red Lion Inn is a historic hotel. It's been continually operated for, you know, over 200 years. And it's very rich in community. And therefore, as a function of that, we try to support the local community. So we do a lot with farm to table.
So what are you serving in your, and this is a question I get asked all the time in terms of the farm to table. What are you serving in the wintertime?
Well, I constantly have grass-fed animals. Mm-hmm. So I get three lambs from Lila's Mountain Lamb every other week. I get pork pretty much on a once every 2 weeks from Raven and Boar Farm. And, you know, that's available all year round. As far as vegetables and things like that, we do a lot of preserving and canning and freezing and smoking. And so we try to extend the season.
That's awesome. So, in reading through your bio and your, you know, the work that you've done, you are obviously super passionate and super committed to this. And in the last couple of days, it's come up to me through my students and also through the thing that I did at the Javits Center, this idea that the farm to table movement is a trend and that there's a sort of greenwashing of things and that it's easy to say that you are farm to table. And that just sort of like, it's not a trend. I don't understand.
I don't think it's a trend. I think there's people that jump on the word bandwagon.
Right.
But it's not a trend. I mean, we were doing it for hundreds of years, you know. Not me personally.
I'm very old. I have great cholesterol.
My cholesterol's great. Mine's so bad I had to give my doctor up because I was sick of hearing the news.
That's the other solution. Yeah. It's just don't have your cholesterol. Right. I was fine until yesterday.
Until he told you.
Right? Until he told me. So who comes to the Red Lion Inn? Like, what is it? Is it a destination? Is it for weddings?
Yeah, it's a destination. It's, you know, it's centrally located in the Berkshires. It's just rich in history. It's a lot of families, multi-generational families come. And we're trying to make it a little bit more current and a little more youth relevant. So we, you know, we're working on food aspects of it and some of the packages that we offer. So we're trying to, you know, lower our age demographic.
To how? What's your ideal age demographic in that regard?
Well, I mean, we already have, I would say, 45 and up. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get that, you know, late 20 to early 40.
Oh, that's us.
Yeah.
We'll come.
We'll come.
Perfect. Excellent.
It sounds like me.
So I saw that you have a blog and that there's this, you were talking up the ski season. What is there to do? Like what, you know, I mean, other than go and eat. I mean, it sounds wonderful to luxuriate, but give us like a picture of what we could expect.
Well, at the Red Lion Inn specifically, I mean, we try to market the Berkshires as a whole and as a destination. So, I mean, I have friends that own great restaurants or great chefs locally. But as far as things to do, there's skiing, there's museums this time of year. Food is always relevant.
I can take a vacation and just focus on the meals.
Well, I make mine around meals usually, you know, and I know not everybody does. But even at the inn, we have an awesome outdoor swimming pool that's open all year round.
Oh, wow.
The rocks around it are actually heated so the snow doesn't build up.
That's very cool.
And so that's really cool.
That's
awesome. Things to do.
And there's more than one restaurant at the inn, right?
Yes, there's the Lion's Den, which is a pub downstairs that because of where it's located, we don't really have exhaust. So we do a pub menu of sausages and things that we can steam rather than grill. So there's, you know, we make three or four local sausages and soups, things like that.
Awesome.
Sandwiches.
And you have a new restaurant coming up.
We have a new restaurant that's going to open up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. The name of the hotel will be Hotel on North.
Now, for people who don't know, how close together is?
Pittsfield is about a half an hour north on Route 7.
From
the Red Lion Inn.
Okay. And compared to, where is that compared to Boston?
We're two hours south or 2 hours west of Boston.
Okay.
So we're kind of in the middle of you and them.
Okay.
So we're perfectly located.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're really excited about this. It's a 43-room boutique hotel. It's going to be focused on the community as well. It's an old department store building that we're renovating. And the food is going to be kind of like street food with walls.
Cool.
It's so cool. Globally inspired and locally sourced. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
So how, take me through the arc of your career. How do you, like, you're describing my ideal job. Like, I don't want to be in a restaurant every day. So minus that part.
Okay.
But the idea of, like, working with a team of people to build a brand new venture in a pre-existing space, because I live in a place where they're tearing down 600 acres of trees to build a new supermarket when there are three empty supermarkets within a five-mile radius.
Yeah.
So I'm super into reuse of space and sort of upcycling.
We're really focusing on reuse and repurposing. You know, there's been some design people that we've brought in and helped us with certain things, but there were things that we were adamant about, like lighting for one. There were so many lighting fixtures and so many unique pieces of material to use that we kind of put parameters on what we would buy and what we wouldn't buy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was able to reuse all the tin ceilings as backsplashes for certain areas in the restaurant, and the old wooden tables we're going to reuse and repurpose.
So how did you, walk me through how you got to be who you are. You're a graduate of the CIA.
Yeah,
did you grow up in a cooking family?
I did not, but I knew early on that I really enjoyed food. I mean, my mom cooked, my dad grilled outside like most dads, I think, worked the grill. But I was always just into it. And so when I was 14, I started working with actually a gentleman named Noble Massey, who recently passed away. He was an instructor at the CIA and a certified master chef. So I started out with him and then apprenticed with a French chef in the Berkshires and then went to CIA.
You went to CIA straight out of high school?
Yeah, when I was 17, actually. I graduated by the time I was 19 out of CIA and just kind of worked the Berkshires. Did a little time in Westchester, went to Five Diamond Resort in Connecticut, and then migrated back to the Berkshires. So I've been in the Berkshires again now for 12 years.
Awesome. And you are, I mean, you're so obviously passionate about what you do. Like, just the way you talk about it,
yeah,
is really obvious.
I love what I do.
Yeah.
I love what I do. And I'm very fortunate. I mean, not everybody gets to do what I do, so I'm very blessed. But I work hard, and, you know, it's paying off. I mean, it's still... I mean, who gets to design their own restaurant?
You it's know? Amazing.
It's cool. With so somebody cool. else's money.
Right.
It's like a bonus.
That was a piece of advice that I got in culinary school from a chef instructor that I actually really butted heads with.
Yeah.
He and I just did, we were like, could not get along. And everyone else loved him. I was like, it's obviously me. I'm the problem child here. But he said, and I'll never forget, he was like, don't open a restaurant with your own money.
Yeah.
No. Right. Open a restaurant with somebody else's money.
No, it's great. I mean, I love it. And like I said, I'm very blessed.
So I, this weekend, put in my seed order for the vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you looking forward to as things start to thaw?
Well, I'm so looking forward to thaw in general.
In general. I'm so conflicted because I want one more ski weekend or ski day in.
It's been a great year for skiing, and it is winter in the Northeast. And, I mean, we need to be accepting of it. But you're driving down here, and as brown as everything was the other day, it made me realize how much I want green.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
the light, the change in daylight savings time is, I feel like that's like.
It helps.
It helps.
That, like, that's when the light switch goes on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to happen. There's a weeping willow in my doctor's parking lot, actually, that you can see the very first signs of it turning yellow. I'm like, my husband's like, no, you're wishing that to happen. I'm like, I'm telling you it's there. Because they are. They're the first thing. And then there's the forsythia. And then the the weeping cherry blossoms start.
Yeah, so
I was going to ask you, are you a ramps person?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Okay, so how do we handle ramps and not just get caught up in the media frenzy of
you
ramps?
Do everything with respect. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. Don't yank the plants out of the ground, cut them above the root system. I mean, use what's usable and leave what's not and let it regrow.
So wait, this is fascinating to me. I get gifted ramps by a hunter friend of mine who has his secret patch and is assuring me. I mean, they come back every year, so he's assuring me that he's harvesting them, but they're always the whole plant. You can just cut the...
Yeah, you can cut them.
But then you don't get the delicious little bulb at the bottom.
Yes, you do. You get it just above the bulb.
Okay, so if I happened to know where there were some ramps, I would just dig down
just
around it and cut it above the furry part?
Sure.
There's always something left to learn. I'll tell you. Beef stomach in the morning and how to harvest ramps properly in the afternoon. I'm so glad.
And just don't take all of them.
Yeah, well, that's what we've always done.
So even if you do pull the roots, you know, they regenerate.
Right. But that's what we've done is we've taken like no more than 30%.
Kind of like when you find a mushroom patch, you know, or morels. You try not to take all of them.
Mm-hmm. So. This is, do you forage mushrooms?
I do very amateurish. You know, I'll do chicken of the woods, hen of the woods, oysters, morels. I stay away from ones that I'm unsure of.
Yeah.
Smart move.
I'm like, I'm horrified by the idea of foraging mushrooms because my mother, I mean, put the fear of God into my brother and I. Like, we weren't even allowed to touch them out in the woods. So now as an adult in the culinary field, I'm like, I know I'm missing out on something, but it's like flying. Like, everything in my body is like, do not eat this. And we had a mushroom forager come on a couple of weeks ago. I'm blanking on her name. Trag Cotter was on. But who brought us the magic, the candy caps?
Magic mushrooms?
Not the magic. I know I almost said that. I wish. No. Yeah. The candy caps in a jar.
Mordecai?
Yes, Karen Mordecai. Karen Mordecai, professional food writer, mushroom handler. I'd never eaten a forage mushroom in my life, and she brought them here and opened them and on air was like, here, eat.
Really?
It tasted like syrup,
maple syrup. And next day, my whole body smelled like maple syrup. Like, my hair smelled like maple, fingers, everything. It was, they were amazing.
Yeah,
but I'm with you. Like, I'm scared to eat mushrooms out in the wild.
I don't want to die.
I don't want to die. Bacon, egg, and cheese every morning. Slow death. Mushroom fast death. I want to die slowly like normal people. Okay, so Rance, I am obsessed with asparagus. I have a very large asparagus patch in the garden.
Yeah.
Cannot wait. Cannot wait for that to come up. And so you support... Did you say $2.5 to $3 million of local agriculture?
No.
Oh, I wrote that down wrong.
I said between $0.5 and $0.75 million.
Oh, half and three quarters. I just misunderstood.
That's
okay. Oh, please.
Only half and three quarters.
We are a big organization.
You know, but so $0.5 to $0.75 million into the local agriculture economy. Yeah, that's incredible.
You know, and that's based on your food purveyors, coffee roasters, bourbon producers. So it's not just food, but it's local economy and local things that are produced in the Berkshires.
So let me ask you a pragmatic question. Are you using olive oil? Are you using avocado?
Oh, absolutely. We're conscious of the ingredients that are available to us. I mean, we do live in America and it is, you know, the 2000s. Right. So I mean, we try to do as much as we can.
I mean, and I try to tell people, like, whatever you can get local, you should be getting
local.
That's
right.
And it's great because, especially, you know, with the farmer's market season's going to come back to life, you can see the people that are getting
your
money.
You know them. It's relationships. And that's what it's all about to us. I mean, and to me specifically, is the community and the relationships that we have in that community.
I cannot wait to come up to the Red Lion. And I'm in my head, I'm going through the weekends, like in June.
Oh, yeah. I'm making it.
You guys are
going
to lower our age demographic.
Okay. Yeah, we're in.
So, I need a weekend to feel young. Yeah, to feel really. I want to feel like I'm like 12.
I feel like the Berkshires are just, there's like something like just very magic about the Berkshires. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everyone who's up there like loves it and never comes back. I have a friend who lives up there who is just, you know, big and just kind of like different like food community and museums. And she does a bunch of stuff. And it's just, it's so cool. Like,
I think that a lot of the appeal is that it's so close. So, you know, people start out in Manhattan and then driving up for the day or the weekend.
Right.
And then they just realize that, you know, it's really not that far away. So it's you can live there and still be close to civilization.
Close enough to come back.
I'm very much looking forward to it. And do you know who is on our show next week?
I do.
And I will ask you, Chef Brian, will you tell everyone how to get in touch with you, your website, your Twitter, your Instagram? Assuming you want these people to follow you.
Sure. We're obviously the Red Lion Inn. So it's redlioninn.com. It's Chef Brian Ahlberg on Twitter. I'm not sure. What's my Instagram? I have a friend here, Angela, who's refusing to be on a mic.
Just Brian
Ahlberg on Instagram.
Nice.
And you post, so on the train ride over, I was looking at your haggis style bladder.
Oh, awesome. I ate at 11 Madison Park last night, and the best vegetarian dish I've ever had was a roasted celery root inside a pig stomach. Awesome.
I almost accidentally fed my vegetarian friend eggs cooked in duck fat.
It's not meat.
That's what you should do.
That's right.
It's got vegetables in it.
So next week on the show.
Yes. So we have Adina Gregor, who is the Skin Cleanse author. And then we also have Jimmy Carboni's
barbecue brisket friend is going to come in and talk about being a barbecue champion. I'm super excited. And you're not going to be here because St. Patrick's Day is like a thing.
Yeah, I will be with my family.
That's so exciting. Do you do the whole corned beef, boiled potatoes, that whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, my mother, you know, puts on, you know, the Clancy Brothers, Tommy makeup. We're old school, you know, Queens Irish family, whatever. So we'll be with them.
Do you guys do sisters and corned beef brisket?
We do.
Do you brine it yourself?
We do. Maybe. Yeah, we corn it ourselves.
I think I'm gonna put up a recipe this week for corned beef. But you, Chef Brian, you're also gonna share a recipe for our listeners,
yes.
So we can all cook together some St. Patrick's Day themed something.
Very cool.
And hashtag sharp and hot. And I'm gonna go to I got the new Uline catalog. I'll tell you, if you want to really nerd out on the supplies available in the world, go to uline.com. Not a sponsor of the show, but email me, chefemily@sharpandhot.com, if you want to be. It's like a 2-inch thick catalog on the thinnest paper. So it's just thousands of pages of everything.
That's crazy.
Every supply you could ever want. Like traffic cones and like hazmat suits and bottles for Windex and mailing supplies.
Okay.
You can get padded mailing envelopes. Last night, I'd had some wine, and I was like wringing my hands over which color padded envelope I was going to get. And I think I've decided on silver. I feel like that's a nice, neutral, sharp and hot color.
Hilarious. This is very important stuff. Guys, look for your silver envelope.
Your silver envelope, your custom book plate from the Southern Letterpress. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful letterpress organization moving down to New Orleans. And I thank them for the thank you cards as well. And until next week, everybody, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.